Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 71, Episode 5 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, The podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Friday, March 1st, 2019. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Jack O'Brien, Russian sounds are coming to get me. Attacking Cuban embassies. Ooh. I'm going underground with the moles, digging holes. That is courtesy of the one, the only, Christy Yamaguchi Man, at Crispy Meme Donut. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray! Take that.
Miles, can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me, and I just love your hottest takes. Guess that's why they broke and you're upgrade.
Wow. Ooh. I mean, I really do. Just to let you guys know, I do twist cabbage off instinct.
It's the if there first was anything thing I noticed about you that I was like, I've got to work with this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I twist cabbage off
instinct. Look at that instinctual cabbage twist.
And my pink gators? I mean, same for my hooligans in Brooklyn. I mean, dead right. If the head's right, Miles there every night. Yes, and thank you to, don't let me forget you now, Hannah Soltis. Soltis Hannah, Wiggity Wham Wham Wazzle, as your display name for that, you know, Biggie, a.k.a.
Wiggity Wham Wham Wazzle.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Out here doing big things, Soltis.
Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat once again by the hilarious comedian Atsuko Katsuka.
Hi, thank What's you up? For having me again.
Give her the dance hall sirens one time.
Oh my God. Bruh.
Dance hall
twerk
queen.
Twerk queen.
Truly an honor. Thank
yes. It is an honor to be in your presence. How you been?
I've been good. I've been good. It's, 2019 and... I was sick for like a month and a half, so I feel like I'm just I'm just seeing this year.
Oh no!
It's great.
Yeah. You had like just a cold or something?
Yeah, like cold, fever, flu. Getting back and forth. Yeah. Between my husband and I.
Oof. Okay. That's the worst.
That's okay, but
keep it in the family. You know?
Y'all look great.
You've been keeping it moving on the social meds. I was saying your dance videos with your grandma are amazing. They're wonderful.
Thank you.
And they make Jack very jealous.
I think that I need to make her an account.
Yeah.
Maybe my grandma.
Yeah. Like Lily Hayes. I mean, Lily Hayes is out here getting hers with her son, putting her on blast all the time. Do you follow that account?
I don't. No. Is she's, grandma?
It's this dude's mom. Oh. She's this Israeli woman, and her accent is wild, but she's super funny, and he's always like,
just fucking antagonizing her. Uh-huh. And she's like, leave me alone! And if like,
it's like
anyone,
Tom Green.
Yeah, just like fucking with okay. your parents stuff. But right. she yeah. also likes to dance and shit. It's just, look, that's follow awesome, Lily man. Hayes.
Ooh, the yes. Israeli accent is fucking awesome.
She's like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Do you want me to hit you in the eyes? There's one where she says, do you want me to hit you
she
in
just
the eyes?
Into oh my God. Schwarzenegger there. All
yo,
of
her intense, it's just that like immigrant mom fire she spits yeah, yeah, yeah. though. So even me, like not having anything to do with is, like Israel or anything, or white people, I'm uh-huh. like, I recognize that
or
energy.
Anything. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very empowering, yeah. it sounds like.
Shout
yeah.
out to all the intense moms from other countries who will scream at you in public.
That's right.
Well, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about today. We're going to talk about the continued fallout from Michael Cohen's testimony yesterday in the mobster realm. We're going to talk about some new 2020 announcements for Democratic presidential candidate, and we might do a quick dumb racism roundup, and then we're going to have a particularly international yeah. second act of
lots
the show
cooking.
Today. Not just looking at America's shared consciousness, the world's shared consciousness. There's a lot going on. But first, Otsuko, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Well, so I watched Bohemian Rhapsody for the first time uh-huh. last night. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I fell asleep, so it was like, it's like a big blur, but...
He becomes the queen at the end.
He is, yeah. I figured it's so many queen,
yeah,
like themed Oscar,
yeah, the
films.
Favorite, yeah,
yeah, just all queens. Yes. But I didn't know he had Asian roots.
So oh yeah,
when the film, I never thought about it. I was like, oh yeah, he was always just Freddie Mercury. He was always
right.
Queen,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
He was always just like a rock star. And then I failed to even like think about what he was made up of.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
And then on screen comes like the character is playing his parents, and I was like, is he South Asian? So anyhow, that was the Google search.
Gotcha.
What country are his parents from again?
So they're Parsis.
Okay.
So they're Persians. Who fled Persia, what was then Persia, to India.
Oh, wow. Well, and we're going to talk about India a little bit later on.
I know. And then they moved to, yeah. Anyhow.
India's so hot right now, you guys.
India's really hot. India's, Pakistan is really hot
really
right
hot.
Now.
Yeah.
That whole region is really hot right now.
That's why I brought it up. I'm just kidding. No, but yeah, that's in my search history.
Did you watch nice. Favorite?
I did not, no.
Oh, the Favorite's awesome. Yeah, Miles just saw it.
I'm a big fan of the director.
Yeah.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Do you like Dogtooth?
Love Dogtooth.
Dogtooth is so fucked up, but I love
so
it.
So messed
man.
Up. Yeah.
yeah. It's like one of those movies that I only tell people who have already admitted to liking it that I like it, because if I'm like, oh, I love that, and they're like, because there's like some real weird shit.
Oh, I need to see that.
It's about a father who like imprisons his children, and real weird stuff happens.
Right.
Oh. Kind of a weird like mind. Game
right.
Is it a
thing.
Thriller or dark comedy?
No,
or?
It's like more like one of those, I don't know,
trippy
fucked up movies.
Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
It's not really a genre.
Right.
Yeah,
because even The Favorite is sort of like the way it's shot is so, it's very different. I
yeah.
enjoyed it.
They
yeah.
call him, you know, like one of the gods of Greek weird wave.
Weird wave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good
fuck
way of
yeah.
describing mm-hmm. it.
Damn, that's a wave I want to be on.
I never watched The Killing of a Sacred Deer. That's the one that I... haven't watched.
Yeah, that one's also really fucked up.
Yeah.
But like it also teeters on comedy. So, but you know, like he started making movies when the economy crash happened
right.
in Greece.
Yeah.
And so I think it was like a like cheap, weird ways to tell like fucked up like stories.
Right.
With mm-hmm. what you have budget wise.
Yeah. And then look at The Favorite now. They had a budget.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Mm-hmm. A little budget.
A little bit of a budge.
Yeah. Comedy has really come a long way, I will say. That's one thing I learned from The Favorite, because their version of comedy was getting a overweight man naked, putting him in a wig, and then throwing tomatoes
yeah.
at him.
Yeah. And, blood oranges or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. yeah. And it's good. I mean, I'm not saying anything negative about that, but it's just, you know,
I mean,
it's become a
little
bit
like,
more.
People still do, like, I mean, Jackass was sort of the revival of the jester
yeah.
culture, you know? So
yeah, no, that's right. fair. That's fair.
It all comes around.
What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated. I had to write it down because maybe it was underrated in my head too. Oh, I just watched The Dangerous World of Comedy on Netflix,
oh,
a docuseries.
Larry.
Yeah, the guy who
directed Borat.
That's right.
Larry, the guy who directed Borat.
Larry,
is
the
his
guy.
Full name.
I can't yes. think of his last name right.
Charles,
now.
I think.
Yeah, that's right. I think it is Larry Charles.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
it's really yeah, like I don't know, maybe because I've been at home sick, so I think it's underrated, but maybe everyone's watching it. I don't know.
I have not seen it
I
yet.
I heard about it when they were first like talking about releasing it and making it, and then I guess it did it just come out? Or
yeah, it just came out.
Yeah, people, I'm Wait, starting so to hear about it.
What is the general premise? I know it's just about comedy in different parts of the world.
Right, I mean, he goes to like conflict zones.
Oh, right.
And he's like, okay. Is there a stand-up comedian here? You know, and there are stand-up comedians or like humorists.
Right,
who
right,
make
yeah.
videos, and they're like in Iraq or, you know,
right.
Libya.
He interviews some ISIS guys about their sense
about,
of humor.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They're not that funny, it turns out.
Yeah.
No way, are you for real?
Yeah, I'm dead serious.
Does.
Yeah.
He does.
It's
He's like, what do you guys like, pratfalls?
Right.
Are you like
well, character bits? Prop comedy?
They legitimately are like, yeah, no, we laugh sometimes. Like there's the, when you're dragging the bodies of people you just killed behind your Jeep. Like
that's right, yeah.
You find yourself laughing a lot because it's just funny to watch them bounce around. So yeah, it's like kind of a dark but psychological look at the roots of comedy. I heard him interviewed on Chapo Trap House actually.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was a good interview. Yeah. I'm excited to watch that.
Was it like super heavy to watch or was it just
no, it's very,
very interesting?
Refreshing. You know, you have comedians who were like, yeah, I was abducted by Al Qaeda, but then, you know, when we were getting tortured, I think he tortured me less because I started cracking jokes as a way of survival.
Wow.
You know, and it's like a refreshing, it's not like a typical comedy documentary that,
yeah,
you know, that
right.
we've been seeing, which
it's
is like
ha ha, yeah. let's pat ourselves on the back.
Yeah, or just being, you know, comedians from the 90s being like, oh, I started at the Comedy Cellar and blah,
right.
blah, blah. No, it's
right.
like people it's like, being like, I was abducted and I said, you know, I said to the dude who was going to torture me, I was like, please, please, anything but, you know, bottles up my ass. And then I guess the torturer started laughing.
Right.
And he's like, bring in the bottles.
So they treated him better. And he's like, oh, thank God it's plastic or whatever,
right.
you know, instead
yeah.
of a glass
yeah,
bottle.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy would laugh again. And like, so it's really, it's like people who, you know, kind of found comedy as like a survival.
An escape, right? Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Damn, all right, I'm going to have to check that out.
It's really cool.
And as a comedian who, you know, you have family from another country, do you feel like you view like the relationship of comedy to the culture you're in like more objectively than other people maybe? Like,
Possibly, maybe. Yeah. I definitely see like the beauty of like taking something traumatic and
yeah.
finding the levity of it.
Yeah.
But I think I'm still trying to figure out what the question was. Do I look at comedy more objectively?
Right. Or like from a like, did you relate to it in any way that was like specific to somebody from, you know, a Japanese background? Like having like, have you looked at comedy in Japan and like what things are like, what people find funny there as opposed to in the United States?
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm still trying to figure that out. I grew up watching a lot of slapsticky stuff for
right.
sure.
Yeah.
I feel like that feels universal. Like,
right.
Even
yeah.
in the States.
Well, Japanese humor, a lot of it's based in status.
Right.
You know, like a lot of the humor is derived from like a senpai kohai kind of relationship where one, like a lesser person is being admonished. Or other, like there's a lot of the humor comes out of that sort of status
right.
shit.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the humor that's super funny here or in Japan would be hard to do in the US because of people's egos sometimes.
Huh.
Like the super fucking wild shit that's like, you know, people are like, oh, these Japanese game shows, these people are humiliating themselves.
Right,
is what
right.
it looks like to American people.
Because right.
they're like, I would never make myself look like that.
Right.
But in Japan, people are just like, oh, that's just funny. Or this
right.
is dumb. It's not like, oh, this guy's right. humiliating himself.
Right.
Where I think that relationship would be a little bit different. But
Yeah.
There's a show that I wish they made in the U.S. That is like, anyway, I don't want to talk about that.
Okay.
It's a good idea that
oh,
I feel like someone
good.
Else,
yeah, yeah.
someone needs to really
oh, no,
develop.
You got to save it
right,
to
yeah.
make the American version.
Like when you were like early last year, you were like, there's this show in Korea called The Masked Singer that somebody should bring over here. And then,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
And then look
and
what
then
happened.
These motherfuckers.
And then they got a Korean American to judge it.
Yeah. Right.
Ended up being T-Pain.
What is something you think is overrated?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
What?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, okay.
You said you fell asleep, right?
Yeah, and then I was like, it was just a long music video. It was just a long music, and then the songs kept playing in my head while I was sleeping. I couldn't sleep very well last night.
Mm.
I think it just kind of like biopics in general.
Yeah.
A little bit overrated, yeah. I think, because it's just like, how good of an impression can the actor do of the real person?
Right.
But sometimes I'm like, I'd rather just watch the documentary of the real person.
Right. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know.
Because there's more, I think, more magnetism when you're actually seeing the real people involved than a
right.
portrayal. What was like the, what's the best biopic you think?
Best biopic.
I don't know.
Does Amadeus count as a biopic?
Probably. Oh.
In a way.
Yeah, yeah. That was really fun, that's actually. A good one. I like that. But, you know, we don't really know what he
Was there, actually. Yeah,
right, is there right. footage of Amadeus right. out there?
Yeah, exactly.
That we don't know about? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah. And that's an actual historical figure. I actually haven't watched Gandhi all the way through, but that's, I think, supposedly up there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Jamie Loftus would say I, Tanya.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think
Tanya,
Malcolm X is
right.
probably the best. Or
that one's intense too. Yeah.
yeah.
You know, I, Tanya did like really played with the format, and that's why I actually liked I, Tanya because
right.
it was like, oh, documentary format. And then it was like, you know, talking head interviews to like, yeah, to even talk like breaking the fourth wall sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
It was different. It wasn't just like, does she look like her?
I mean, what about super producer Nick Stump is waving violently a notepad? Sully?
Oh, mm. isn't yeah. that just about a single incident, though? Like, oh. does that start with Sully as a child? Like,
no, I think I haven't seen it, but yeah, it's about somebody.
I was going to say Forrest Gump, but I that's stupid.
Or I think LaVey and Rose was pretty good.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that,
oh,
one's
yeah.
that one's good.
I haven't seen that yet.
It's about a rose?
Yep, like, it's about a rose.
Birth to birth.
It's
to
about
death.
A rose
and
with some wackily painted eyebrows.
Life. That's yeah. right.
That's one about Edith Piaf. People don't remember.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, Tanya is kind of a biopic because it starts when she's a kid.
Too. Yeah, no, I think that definitely counts. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
And remember when Margot Robbie played 15 too? And people were like, oh, wait, that's just Margot Robbie.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
When she played
with
what?
With braces on.
15.
Because she also played the younger I, Tanya.
Oh, right, yeah.
But like we just saw her as just regular age.
Right,
I,
and then you're like, oh,
Tanya.
So you plus braces.
Yeah.
And then they put braces on
really
her.
Braces really do it, man.
Yeah.
No, it was very much a grown woman.
Yeah,
right.
Being like, I'm 15, just believe it.
Right. Hey, it works for me in Pen 15.
Yeah,
so.
Suspend
that's
your
right.
disbelief.
Yeah.
That's right.
But that's a different, I think that operates in a completely different way right. than Margot Robbie, like, and I'm 15 now, so
let's
get through it.
Have you seen reenactments in like National Geographic, like Locked Up Abroad? Those
oh,
are
yeah.
actually pretty good. I feel like biopic-wise, quote-unquote, not biopic, but like people playing
reenactments. Right.
Yeah.
The casting is good?
Like
casting
they find
the casting
acting.
Is good in Locked Up Abroad.
Yeah, and acting too. I'm
really?
Surprised. Yeah.
Huh.
There are times when I'm like, is that the dude who's talking right now? Like,
is it?
They, no.
But
they have
find
actors.
Somebody who looks like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, who
yeah.
have them.
Because that's always so hard. Like in movies, I feel like they never quite get it. They never like find somebody who looks like the
well,
person.
Well, I think because the budgets are, I don't know, maybe they're just sort of like, that's good enough. And they only need to be able to do like, sort of tortured looks off
right.
into the distance.
That's
because
true.
It's mostly narration anyway.
Got it.
That's right, right. But I feel like those are underrated,
huh.
I think.
All right.
Back to that, the
back
actors
that.
In Locked Up Abroad.
The uh-huh. actors, the casting and acting.
Casting
and
Locked
give
Up
them
Abroad.
A
Locked Up Abroad.
Yep.
Very specific, and I love it. What is a myth? What's something people think is true you know to be false?
This is maybe, I mean, I don't know. This one's hard because without sounding like a conspiracy theorist or something, I guess maybe that just like, undocumented immigrants don't commit more crimes than native-born citizens.
You're saying they do. They commit more crimes.
Oh, they do not.
Okay.
People.
No,
the myth is that they do.
Right.
The myth is
yes.
that they
right.
do.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That
did
is not a conspiracy
English,
theory at all.
That is statistically proven
no,
out.
No. So that's why
yeah.
I settled for that.
That's good.
That's why I settled for that, because I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well, it's just like the most tired shit that gets paraded out every time. And even with this gun bill that they passed this week, they managed to sort of perpetuate that myth, even in inserting some language in that bill. So,
yeah,
people need to get over that shit.
Well, let's get to the stories because it sounds like we have one that touches
so
on that myth.
Yeah.
yeah.
So first off, we just want to mention that in all of the fallout from the Michael Cohen testimony on Capitol Hill yesterday, my favorite response was from a mobster who predicted, or I guess it was the child of the Gambino mobster, like the Gambino heir, who said that Cohen will get whacked in prison because prisoners love Trump and hate a rat.
Are they doing like Quinnipiac polls in penitentiaries?
Yeah. Apparently,
We want to get it. So, what's your feeling on the president's declaration of the emergency?
Right, but
honestly, I've been on 23-1 lockdown for 14 years. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Any Zeitgang that's in prison, please let us know if Trump is particularly popular there, because he did do prison reform, and mm-hmm. he is like sort of does have an appeal with.
Unsavory characters?
Well, just with people who, you know, are fans of wrestling and shit like that. And I feel like...
I like wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. And you like Trump.
And I like Trump.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We nailed it.
There's
the Venn diagram.
That's too easy.
Yeah, I don't know. That is so weird that they would say that. I mean, I guess logically you could be like, yeah, that would be weird going to prison as Michael Cohen. Especially if it's like Russia adjacent too. Like, I feel like if any... Somebody's gonna mess with somebody would be Russia more than prisoners who are like, hey man, you really should have gone easier on the president.
Right.
And I'm gonna shank you.
And I mean, as we saw with Whitey Bulger, it really is up to the prison to protect them. Like if it's a prisoner who has, you know, a legitimate cause to be worried about their safety, like the prison needs to be 100% have their guard up all the time because they turn their back for a minute and they get their head beat in.
I wonder what, but I don't think Michael Cohen is going to like Rikers.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's probably true. He's probably going to a white collar prison, but it is just amazing. It kind of underlines this overall mobster culture that is pervading our zeitgeist right now. Like the Drudge Report headline going into his testimony was Rat Fest.
Right. And,
like everybody is calling him a rat on the right.
Yeah, he's going from what I understand from when he was basically the sentencing stuff was heating up. He's most likely going to Otisville prison. And Forbes named it as one of America's 10 cushiest prisons.
All right.
Oh.
So I don't think you're going to have beef with anybody in there.
All right.
Well, but anyway.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Shout out to Michael.
Yeah, shout out to doing white collar crime that totally fucked the election, or whatever. Look, we don't have to get into that yet.
And for promising to not write a book.
Yeah, promise you're not going to write a book or make money off your rights. Right. Promise right now. What's he going to do if he does? Come back and he's like, oh, you promised, dude.
Yeah.
You fucking promised. I'm pissed, dog.
Yeah.
How dare you?
That just bought like 3 minutes of time, that's all.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So we're still waiting on two high-profile Democrats to announce whether they're going to enter the 2020 race. I think it's basically a foregone conclusion that they are going to enter. It's just a matter of like the timing and what justification they give. But it is the killer bees, Beto and Biden. Beto has announced that he won't run against John Cornyn in 2020 for his Texas Senate seat, which suggests that
he's probably running for something else in 2020.
Right.
And he said something really like so on the nose. It's like, you know, we've decided what we're going to do.
And I'm so excited.
And we're so excited to let you know what our plans are. So
that would be amazing. He's he was like, we decided. Like,
it's a fourth child with my wife.
Right. That's what we're doing instead. Yeah. We were just talking about, you know, our hopes and fears about Beto. And, you know, we just don't know much about this dude right now.
We'll see what, we'll see what the platform he comes with.
We know where he stands on cap. We know, like, and the NFL kneeling thing.
We know where he's mostly, like, holding it down for minorities and immigrants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know what his takes are on, you know, and just righting the wrongs of the many wrongs that we're facing in this nation. But, I'm waiting.
You were saying you foresee maybe a lime scooter philosophy.
What about
future?
Free lime scooters for everyone? They come out and are so disappointed. Like, whoa, Beto, what the fuck?
He's a fucking idiot.
That
lime scooters are sick.
I think SoundCloud Premium should actually be free for everyone. Fucking ads are whack, dude. And also, I have an EP you guys should check out. He's announcing a fucking EP. Yo. Please Jesus. Do that. Please that do that. Yeah.
That is my fever dream nightmare.
Is it he
that
said it whatever it was going to be best for the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it could be free Lime scooters.
It's a diss track to Joe Biden.
I maybe. Thought maybe more dimples. I don't know.
Dimples for everyone.
More Beto smile, that yeah. heartthrob
yeah.
smile.
Oh, yeah, man.
More smile. Teeth.
More what skateboarding.
What a head of teeth yeah. on that guy.
But then, yeah, you got Biden, too. I know at first people were saying that maybe Biden and Beto would run together. I don't
Why?
Think,
just because their names are?
I don't know. Or they were like, oh, well, that Beto would solve Biden's like lack of appeal to progressives
mm. right.
and younger people. Because uh-huh. Biden, you know, he's the kind of dude who gets you those like blue-collar votes in like Pennsylvania and Ohio
yeah.
who may you can yeah. might be able to steal away from Trump. But the dude is 76. Yeah. Bido is what? Bido.
Bido. Bido 2020.
Yo, Bido 2020.
Yeah.
Bido is 46.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they got some years between them. But yeah, I mean, Biden basically said it without saying it because he was like, I finally, the one concern I had about running, which was putting my family through a potentially devastating presidential campaign,
right.
has been alleviated.
Why? Did he leave his family?
he was like, just like, I'm wow. only going to do it if my family Deuces. Wants me to. And apparently his family's been like, do it, Dad.
Uh-huh.
Do it.
Do it, Grandpa.
Even though, I don't know. I'm, you know, bro, if please stay home.
Yeah.
There's no
honestly.
Need. Honestly. It's already congested as fuck.
Right.
There's it's too many congested. People, and we don't have time for centrist dudes.
It just seems like, I don't know, we have politicians already in the race who have been thinking about their policies and their, you know, where they stand on things and ideas for how to solve some of the country's problems for their whole lifetime. Like, Bernie hasn't really been changing up much about his message. He's just right. like, yeah, this is what I believe. Like, you can ask him anything, and he knows where how it relates back. And Elizabeth Warren, same deal. Like, she just, like, already, you know, has a really thought-out policy on basically everything. Like, Beto has the opposite. I don't know where he stands on anything. And Biden seems like he changes from year to year, depending on, like, yeah. what's...
But I mean, the one thing that I'll give I almost said fucking Bido again. Yo, Bido, I'm fucking with that. You know what? Actually, if they run together, I'm about it.
Right.
I'm about Bido. Biden is the only one who has like tangible foreign policy experience. So that's the one thing he has.
Biden?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. like straight up, you know?
Straight up.
Him and Bernie would be the oldest. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Just. They shouldn't even, I don't think they should even do the debates. They should just have like a square off with a chess game.
Yeah.
Just like geriatrics.
Who can feed more pigeons in the park?
That's right. Who can draw more pigeons?
Right. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Zach gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone. Transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system. Or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, you know, I had a bustling retail business, and I need, you know, maybe some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/TDZ, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
And we're back, and we wanted to talk about the conflict between India and Pakistan, because we feel a responsibility to our listeners that if a story is going to kill them, that they should at least hear about it on our show first.
And yeah. There's, well, I don't know if it would kill them.
It might not kill you, but...
we got very close to... I don't know. I mean, things are still very hot. India and Pakistan, because over the last month, since I think on Valentine's Day, basically what happened is on Valentine's Day, there was an Indian military convoy that was attacked by a car bomb by this group, the Army of Muhammad, who, you know, the Indian government accuses Pakistan of arming and training to sort of destabilize their influence and control in the Kashmir region.
Right.
So
Kashmir is like the border. It's the like.
Valley
between Pakistan and India that, like, India claims is theirs, Pakistan claims is theirs.
Yeah, and they had to just slice it sort of down the middle, right, where they're both stacked up militarily on each side.
Right.
And, you know, ever since they got independence in 1947, you know, the Hindus and Sikhs settled in India, the Muslims went west to Pakistan, and there's just been... Yo, they've been beefing for like 70 years. They've been had like three of the last four wars they fought have been over this Kashmir region.
Yeah.
And so, yes, after that bombing, India responded by bombing a base of the Army of Muhammad. They claimed they killed 300 militants. Pakistan was like, actually, you just dropped like your bombs on an empty like spot of land. So
right.
Nice try. Then some fighter jets were shot down. Helicopters were shot down. Like an Indian pilot was captured in Pakistan. And now the Pakistani government is saying, like, we're willing to, you know, give you your pilot back as like a gesture of peace.
That's good.
So it's not quite getting there. But, you know, that's not a region where you really want shit going off, because, A, they're both armed to the teeth with nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. Like India has somewhere between 100 and 200 nukes. Pakistan has like somewhere around 120. Mm-hmm. And like when you think about, they're literally on each other's doorstep. You have nationalistic and religious tensions brewing the whole time. That's something that can easily progress into, you know, conventional war to nuclear war.
Yeah.
You know, India does have a no first use policy. So they would only swing if they've been swung on with nukes. But again, it's something to be aware of, because that is not, it's just a very, very tense situation.
Yeah.
Well, what should we do?
I mean, look.
I've seen peace between the two, you know, in a restaurant.
Right.
In Oakland.
Right.
One time.
Well, that's what people are saying. That
fusion food?
Yeah. That there's a lot of shared history and culture between the people. Like, mm-hmm. even though, like, militarily, they're at loggerheads. Is that a
yeah?
I wish I hadn't said that, but
at odds.
At odds. There you
How
go.
About that one?
Even though they're at odds militarily, there's a lot of shared culture, and you know there are families that were split up by the Kashmir region and the drawing of that border.
It just sounds so familiar to other places,
right? Exactly.
That we know about.
Wow, yeah. Former colony, and yeah, because went back
shared
when it was
culture.
The British colony of India. Mm-hmm. Everybody was, you know, rocking together.
Yeah.
But,
right.
Yeah.
Speaking of people having kind of international relations experience from the Obama administration on Pod Save the World, which is the Crooked Media, like international relations show, hosted by Tommy Vietor and Ben Rhodes, who are two people from the Obama administration who specifically worked in, you know, on international relations. We're talking about how a lot of experts that they talk to talk about Pakistan being like the number one fear going forward for people in like who focus on global security, because it's basically a failed state that semi-openly supports terrorism and has nuclear weapons. And yeah, they have a generation of young, uneducated men aging into positions where they'll be controlling the nuclear arsenal. And, you know, they were behind that insanely elaborate 4-day-long terror attack of Mumbai. And there's just a lot of scary shit coming out of there. And, like, even this, like, that was a terror organization that attacked the Indian military. And then the Pakistani government didn't, like, disavow it. And they rarely do.
They just casually, like, they're like, they're not full throw. They're like, nah, come on. We don't fucking
know. Who, us?
Them.
Right.
Yeah, they're just like launching attacks from our side.
Yes.
You know, and we don't really do much to control it, but yeah.
Right. So that's a region to keep an eye on. Another region to keep an eye on is the Koreas. We're talking about other places that have been divided down the middle. Mm-hmm. So President Trump was in Vietnam, another place divided down the middle. He was in Vietnam talking to Kim Jong-un, and I think we're good. I don't think we have to worry about it.
No, we're not.
Wait,
Jack.
What happened?
I'm so fucking heartbroken.
Sorry, I stopped paying attention after the first day.
I'm sorry. It's just...
Yeah, you did have your heart set on this.
I believed in love.
Mm-hmm. I believe in.
I mean, they were like writing each other love letters. We love each other. We have this great friendship. He's my best friend. He really likes me. I thought that was going to be enough to get a maniacal dictator hell-bent on the destruction of the West to just hand over their nuclear arsenal. I really thought it was. Maybe I'm a fool. Maybe I'm a fool for believing in love. But turns out, yeah, that's just not happening.
Yes.
The summit literally just fucking collapsed, like, mm-hmm. instantly, because the North Koreans came in, they said, we want just complete sanctions relief if you even want to start this conversation. And Trump, to his credit, was like, oh, hell no, we can't even, if that's step one, we're walking,
right.
Like Chris. So they did it, they walked, thank goodness. However, like, the North Koreans are disputing this claim. They're saying, like, we actually only asked for partial sanctions relief to halt testing. But again, you don't know. This is all part of the back and forth, because now their posturing sort of is now, oh, well, you know, that was the deal. And even if you guys come back, we're not hearing it, which
right.
this has been this is the song we sing every time we talk about disarmament or any kind of talks with North Korea.
Yeah.
I mean, look, at least they're engaging
yes.
With each other. But at the same time, I mean, this is what happens when you have someone like Donald Trump who just believes in their abilities so much that they're like, oh, we don't need any pre-summit meetings to at least hammer out what if we're even on the same page. Because
right.
if they did, they would have saved a lot of time, and this probably wouldn't have even happened.
Yes.
But
I mean, it's always been my policy to believe anything North Korea says, just in general. So I'm trusting them.
I mean, we are American dogs.
Right. And Kim Jong-il once scored an 18 on a golf course. Just by nothing but holes in one.
Is that one of his myths?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, fuck.
Nothing but holes in one.
How many people died?
I know, right?
18 as well.
Right. I'm surprised that, you know, I kind of do believe that they do get along, because Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump kind of have the same upbringing.
Right.
They're both, they wouldn't be shit without
powerful
their daddies.
Fathers who,
you know what I mean?
Gave them everything.
And they also like admire shit about each other. I'm sure Kim Jong-un would love DirecTV to put some Jordans on.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean? Eat some McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump would love to throw journalists in prison and
in
silence
prison,
critics.
Man. Shoot them with anti-aircraft weapons.
Right. Yeah, just
that
blow them the fuck
dream.
Apart.
Yeah. Maggie Haberman.
Yeah, exactly.
In the crosshairs.
But
Trump would love that.
But it's the thing is, like, even if the nuclear disarmament part, those talks fell apart, there's still plenty of shit that we can engage North Korea on that is pressing, right?
Right.
Like fucking human rights violations, mm-hmm. right? You could have been like, okay, let's talk about something else.
Right.
We have fucking 3 days. We blocked the timeout.
Yeah.
What about that? Or what about Otto Warmbier? Yeah. You know, that young man from America who was basically killed in their murdered in the custody of the North Koreans.
Yeah.
Right.
And Trump was quick to parade his mourning parents out during his first State of the Union when he was trying to be like, look at these grieving families, this grieving
Fire
family, Otto Warmbier,
because
of North Korea. And then he asked Kim Jong-un about it, and Kim Jong-un literally basically was like, oh, I don't know her.
Right.
And he was like, I believe him. He doesn't really know anything about it.
I know.
And just left it at that.
That's wild.
So this dude, I mean, this you the first step of trying to negotiate with someone is figure out if you have leverage, and you gave it all up already.
Yeah, and if you don't, call Dennis.
Yes.
Dennis Rodman is
I know.
Ready to do the fucking mediating.
With his weed Bitcoin company that was sponsoring him last time.
We need the emotional stability of Dennis Rodman involved in
this.
He
sent that letter from his desk.
That we are fucked.
I know. You know, that could be the reason why this didn't go all the way.
Yeah, Rodman wasn't there. Rodman's peacekeeping mission to the first meeting was, like, he couldn't make it through a sentence without bursting into tears.
Yeah,
I know.
It was just very concerning that he was the one that I was more comfortable with the emotional stability of in that situation compared with our president. But it's wild because the mainstream media is responding to this as if I think it's just that it's familiar. There's a comforting familiarity with peace talks falling apart. They're just like as opposed to Trump being like, we solved it. Give me my, you know, Medal of Honor or whatever
Nobel
the fuck he
prize.
Thinks he deserves.
Right. I'll be hook it up.
Right. Instead of that, like it fell apart like, you know, Reagan, Gorbachev, and people are in the mainstream media are like, well, thank God he didn't give away our entire country to pursue his personal goals, which is just a, like, yes, I get why it's comforting to have this president act like a previous president, but that is just such an absurd lowering of the bar, like almost to the point of nihilism that we're just like happy that he didn't just completely fuck up by like going after whatever he wanted. It's just, I don't know. It's, We should have higher standards than please don't overtly put your interest before the security and lives of the entire United States.
I hope that they're able to find common ground again. You know, if this is really like the romantic comedy I envision it to be,
right?
It'll cool off a little bit.
Yeah.
And they will come back to the table and maybe they will solve this. I still believe in love. At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, usually what happens is, you know, the more evil of the dictator starts to believe in Christmas again, you know?
Right, right.
So, hopefully.
Oh, goodness. But yeah, so I guess he's back on his little train. He's going to go take his 2-day train ride back to North Korea.
It's not a little train.
Okay, it's a very big train. It's like fucking Snowpiercer.
With the greatest wine collection of any train.
Does it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Reports about it are that it's just like an incredible luxury. Mm. Like it's only like the first 3 cars of Snowpiercer.
Right.
With the children underneath the floorboards just powering the thing. But yeah, it is supposedly very kind of decked out.
Well, you know, I guess that's a foreign policy swing and a miss again. But on to the next one.
Hey.
I mean, that was supposed to help Trump's poll numbers. But I guess maybe people are going to be like, he showed tremendous character by walking away from that absurd offer.
Yeah.
No shit.
A swing and a miss, but at least he didn't spin around and his pants didn't fall down.
It was a foul tip that just was the other side of the foul pole.
Right. All right. Let's talk Israel, you guys.
What's going on over there?
So, BB, we want to bring in super producer Anna Hosnier to talk to us about BB Netanyahu. She is our resident expert on Middle East relations and the host of the amazing Ethnically Ambiguous podcast. She is super producer Anna Hosnier. And we wanted to bring you into this conversation because Netanyahu, the far right and only getting further right leader of Israel, is now reportedly he's going to be indicted, right, for bribery charges.
Yeah, so Netty Butt Butts, as I like to call him.
Oh, that's cute.
Hey, you have some respect for me. Hey, don't fuck around. I'm from Philadelphia.
Yeah. Grew up in Philly.
Did you really?
Went Philly, to MIT. He kind of has a Philly accent.
Oh, okay.
It is funny how most like foreign regime leaders all study abroad
in the U.S.
and then come back, yeah.
And they're all like, yeah, so this is my deal. And I'm like, that's how Assad talks? Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same thing with like Rouhani. He like studied in Europe. For,
right.
And then he comes back and he's like, I tweet in English every day. And you're
right.
Like, what?
Wow.
Anyway, so yeah, so Attorney General Avichai Mandelbilt, who used to be Netanyahu's former cabinet secretary.
Uh-oh.
But he's very impartial.
T-Report.
He came through and he's been investigating Netanyahu for a few years now over his basically bribery charges. This guy, Netanyahu, look, he is not afraid of a nice suit. If you give him a nice suit, boy, will he make your company look good.
Or like literally you can give him a nice suit?
Manafortian?
Yeah, it's like really dumb. It's like cigars will get you good press with Netanyahu. But so one of the charges is that he worked with Hollywood producer Arnon Milchan, who is an expatriate Israeli, to promote legislation that could benefit Mr. Milchan, which in the end got blocked by the finance ministry. So it didn't even go through, but he got like cigars, jewelry, hundreds of thousands of dollars were given to him. And then that he like used that money to like make his house very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Another charge was that he was accused of discussing with the publisher Yediat Aharonot, which is one of Israel's biggest newspaper, to put out favorable coverage of him.
Oh, wow. That's like some real like dictator shit.
Yeah. Like some real U.S. Mm-hmm. shit.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
I guess it is. But is it a like tabloid or is it an actually good, like respected news source?
I think it's a respected news source.
Wow.
Yeah. And that guy, or that's also connected to another American billionaire who is a devoted supporter of Netanyahu. A lot of the money, I feel, comes out of America, which, what do you know?
Right.
My most memorable instance was when his son was just outside of a strip club talking crazy shit mm-hmm. about how his dad exchanged favors with the strip club owner's dad.
No, it was another kid. No, yeah. They were just at a strip club.
Okay.
And on tape, he was like, Netanyahu's son was like, needed 100 or 200 bucks or something. And uh-huh. He was trying to borrow it from him. He's like, oh, you can't lend me 200 bucks? Dude, my dad hooked your dad up with like a $20 million deal, like just on wax.
Oil-related stuff. Yeah. It was really shady. And the third case is that Netanyahu has pushed regulatory actions through the communications ministry, which he was in control of at the time, which was very lucrative for Shaul Elovich, who's a principal owner of the Bezak Telecommunications, like giant whatever, like
conglomerate.
Yeah. And that led to like a lot of great coverage of Netanyahu and his family and all that stuff. And then on top of that, this guy, Mandelbilt, the attorney general, has come after his wife, Sarah Netanyahu, who has used over $100,000 of public funds for her own shit. Like just to like Postmates, basically.
Oh, really?
Well, just things like that where she was just using it to do her own thing. Like,
hey, you
she
know,
was
but
like,
hey,
what?
Hey, hold on. I have to defend my wife. She needed that shit.
Yeah.
So okay. Let it go.
Yeah. And she's apparently a real Marie Antoinette type.
Mm-hmm.
Real bitch.
Yeah, this is kind of funny because it's so close to being what's happening in the U.S.
It is.
Where their leader is about to be, could be indicted, but then it's someone serving office with like these charges hanging over their head. And then really, like, this is the first time in Israeli history that a prime minister has been charged with a crime.
Right.
So this is like, they're even over there trying to figure out, it's like, well, do we let it rock while he's trying to run for re-election? But
right.
He could be basically face, like, real court shit.
If he's convicted, like, then it would probably be, like, sent to the courts if he is re-elected. So
and
that's a big detail. Is
he's
that
asking for them not to do that because he knows if they do, everything will be leaked.
Right.
He's very scared of that.
Oh, so the details aren't fully out.
No, but he is asking, please, to Mr. Mandelbelt, who he promoted to attorney general, which I think is the best thing. It's like, This man has been watching your behavior.
He should have recused.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have been like, is he capable of doing it? But he doesn't want that info to get out.
Are you saying they know how to redact documents over there? They successfully can redact documents as opposed to our.
But the election for the upcoming prime ministry job is April 9th. So yeah, he doesn't want anything out before the election happens.
That's the big difference is that this would be like Trump getting indicted like a couple months before the
Beto releases
2020
his
election. Yeah, before Beto releases drops that
EP.
Hot fire. Yeah, so that's interesting. I mean, Netanyahu has spent the last, I don't know, like decade basically moving further and further right to the point that he's now alienating people who were on what used to be the right by just, you know, inviting in these super far right, like maniacal, militaristic Zionists. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's now becoming clear that maybe you should go to prison. So I don't know. I try not to get involved in
other people's business,
foreign elections, like because I feel like, what do I know? But it seems like this one's pretty clear cut.
You don't try to meddle too much.
That's not very American of you.
Sometimes I will support a light coup or, you know, a military uprising.
A light coup.
Yeah. The guy he's running against is Benny Gantz?
Benny Gantz, who's the former army chief of the IDF, who is he's a more centrist. He's running with the centrist party. I think they're called Blue and White, and he's attached to the Yesh Atid, who is they're the party against the Likud party. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, it's Netanyahu's party.
Yeah. Right. And he, you know, his whole thing is that he's more progressive, but the way to maintain any sort of like flow while trying to run is to have complete ambiguity when it comes to the Israel-Palestine conflict. Like, he currently is like, Benny Gantz, that is, I will seek peace, but at the same time, he is not, like, he's like, I want to make an agreement where we have a land agreement and seek peace, but he has no actual info on how he's going to do that. And I think that's what Israelis like. That's how centrist parties kind of move. But the weird thing is that, like, since 96 to now, there have been 9 different centrist parties who have gone against Netanyahu, and eventually they slowly fade because there's no real plans of how they're going to deal with these things. And it's an interesting thing where Israelis are dissonance is their way of dealing with things. Like, they're kind of like, well, we believe you, but we also kind of like don't really need to know anything right now because it's too sensitive of a topic. Like, it's a weird thing where they're trying to deal with it, but not deal with it. And I don't know how that's going to pan out in the future. I don't know how Benny Gantz is going to do. Like, he's surging in the polls right now, but I guess we just have to wait and see how he does when it comes to the Israeli public.
I mean, we were talking about this earlier before we recorded, and the policies that Netanyahu supports are basically like apartheid, like human
just
rights. Yeah, just straight up racism, human rights abuses, and yeah, so I mean, it's definitely a international story that we will be keeping our eye on for a change.
And maybe I think his wife should launch an anti-cyberbullying campaign.
Yeah,
that might be good.
What? Be good, yeah, because Be Best was taken.
Be Bester.
Be Best.
Yeah, let's just start with her son, who just posts racist memes all day.
I know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Facebook. He's bad.
They've got their own Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah.
It's all the same. Yeah. It's all the same.
Baron has probably less of a presence, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Baron took his phone away.
We
support Baron on this podcast.
One thing that Benny Gantz, again, he was head of IDF, so he attacks Netanyahu by putting out these ads that say, like, look at all the destruction we've put on Gaza and the Palestinians. Everything's destroyed. We've killed all these people. But he references the time when he was the head of the IDF. So he's getting a lot of heat for that. So they put out all these cartoons where it's like this like muscular IDF guy holding machine gun. And he's saying, we believe in peace. Or like, peace is the answer. And it's just like, he's getting a lot of heat for that. Because they're like,
yeah, but
you
were
literally in charge of the IDF.
Yeah.
Man.
At the same time, I'm sure he's trying to do the politically savvy thing and, you know, triangulation and all that Clintonian bullshit.
Let's hope for the best.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Super Producer Anna Hosnia. We are going to take another quick break and we will be right back.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
And we're back.
Oh,
and
wow.
Just so we don't go making anybody think that we are speaking from a place of, you know, superiority, we want to take a quick check-in with
Do we ever?
I mean, I think people realize that as Americans, we think we're better than everybody. And, you know, all those times that we just break into USA chants on this podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's us.
Whenever I hear that, I'm like, I walk the opposite direction.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe the Republicans were still doing that at the last State of the Union.
Well,
that's wild.
It is what it is.
Anyway, speaking of wild shit Republicans are still doing, let's check in with Mark Meadows because we were kind of, I mean, he's been around for a while, but he came onto my radar during the Cohen hearing.
Oh, man. He's been on mine since he was a teabagger, tea party fuck in 2010.
Right. I think he just blended into that crowd.
Yeah. Well, like all of them, like Jim Jordan, all the. But anyway, Mark Meadows during the Michael Cohen testimony. You know, we touched on the idea, the fact that he had brought out this black woman who works for the administration and formerly for the organization. And he basically used her as a prop to say, this black woman is proof that Donald Trump is not racist.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And Rashida Tlaib, shout out to you from Michigan. When
awesome.
She had her time, she was like, I just want to say that was some racist fucking BS I just saw. Like,
right.
He really just used this person as a shield for like mm-hmm. the most absurd argument against being racist, which is the fact that you could have a friend would preclude you from having racist tendencies in even the lightest terms. And he got so wound up. He was like, I have nieces and nephews that are people of color that I'm embarrassed to admit. Because afterwards he said, he's like, the chairman knows, like referencing Elijah Cummings, who's black. He's like, the
right.
chairman knows.
You tell him, chairman.
And like, but he was like, a lot of people don't know this. As if it was like some dark secret. Anyway, mm-hmm. I mean, then he got really emotional. And trying to defend himself, he's like, I'm not racist, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, let's be real. When you're running as a Tea Party candidate and when Obama's in office, there's no way you don't fucking dance near some racist BS rhetoric. So, again, in Mark Meadows' defense, I would just like to present him his own words from a few years ago.
Well, it's good to be here with you today. I thank you so much for allowing me just a few minutes to talk with you and share a few things. But, you know, it's interesting when the more we find out, the more we realize how wrong the direction we're going. And so what we're going to do is take back our country. 2012 is the time that we're going to send Mr. Obama home to Kenya or wherever it is. We're going to do it.
We're going to do it.
We're going to do it.
All right. Hit him with that birther bullshit. Okay, because you're so woke. Maybe he didn't have those nieces and nephews then.
Yes.
That was before. Mm-hmm.
He hadn't found out about that.
That was pre-people of color nieces and nephews.
He probably wasn't admitting it to himself.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, this is just, and even the idea that your nieces and nephews are people of color would, again,
doesn't
say.
Doesn't mean, you're like, yeah.
Okay, great. People who have people of color working for them are not racist. Okay, shout out to slave owners.
Here's
the deal. So now, I mean, okay, that was that. But then Mark Meadows, CPAC is going on, the big conservative hoopla. It's like Comic-Con for conservatives.
Oh, is that happening now?
Yeah.
Woo!
He got out there, and, you know, the Green New Deal is the conservatives' favorite thing to just fucking talk shit about and completely obscure what it actually is. He kicked off his CPAC appearance, Mr. Mark Meadows, with this fucking brilliant line. I mean, he really took it to the Green New Deal with this one. I mean, and I just want everybody to think of what the Green New Deal is and think of that when you hear his words. You'll also hear a follow-up from Mr. Sebastian Gorka, who really puts the cherry on this little comment.
Gork life.
You know, with this Green New Deal, they're trying to get rid of all the cows. But I've got good news. Chick-fil-A stock will go way up because we're going to be eating more chicken, all right? I mean, so listen.
They want to take your pickup truck. They want to rebuild your home. They want to take away your hamburgers. This is what Stalin dreamt about but never achieved.
They need better joke writers. Honestly, like every time they try to do a joke, like we're gonna be, you know, no cows means more chicken. Like
right.
Who's writing?
We have to punch.
I feel bad.
I think
them.
Honestly, we talk about this a lot when we hear attempts at humor from the right.
Yeah,
we should just set up a consulting agency. Like we'll punch up a joke or two for $6,000 a second.
Honestly, like Mike Huckabee's tweets. Like every time he tries to make a joke, I'm just always like, man, I just feel bad for you.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what, like, how that would make sense to someone listening. Where it's like, you know, they're trying. The Green New Deal is about getting rid of cows, right?
Right. Wait, is it not? Is that not what it's about?
I'm pretty
I thought that was the first. Thing.
I don't know. I'm
getting
I'm on the
rid
fence.
Of cows. Like that isn't even an accurate depiction of like a remotely environmental policy.
Right. Getting
killing all the cows.
Getting rid of all the cows.
Yeah.
They want to rebuild your homes. Uh-huh. They want to take, again, it's like the most like elementary version of fear mongering.
Right.
They're like, these people, their value system is cow hamburger pickup truck.
Right.
It's
mostly condescending to the people who they're trying to appeal
right.
to more than anything.
They
want to
take your hamburger.
Right.
And he's
hamburger.
Like, I just started eating salad today. And they're
right.
like, no. You eat hamburgers.
Right.
What are we going to do about all those dead cows? We're going to eat them. We eat hamburgers.
Right. We'll freeze the meat so it doesn't go bad. But we're going to take your hamburgers. So
that Chick-fil-A stock thing, man, that was good material. Conservatives are getting good at comedy, and liberals are scared.
It's just taking
what the billboard for Chick-fil-A does anyway. Eat more chicken. It's the same.
It's a pop culture reference.
I bet he drove into CPAC, saw that billboard,
I did.
And goes, oh, fuck. Mark, you sly devil, you did it again.
Right.
All right, Chick-fil-A joke after take all your cows. Okay, great. Done. Anyway, let's move on to Ralph Northam, governor of Virginia, who was caught in blackface and then kept fucking up every time. And
Cotton blackface sounds like the name of an old-timey racist guy.
Oh, like cotton blackface?
Yeah, cotton.
Yeah. So anyway, this time, I don't even know what to say here. So Ralph Northam's wife, if you remember at the first press conference.
Yeah, she was the voice of reason.
Yeah, someone was like, hey, can you still moonwalk?
And he looked behind him to see if he had a clear runway.
And she was like, inappropriate.
Right, inappropriate
and
circumstances.
And he's like, that would be inappropriate. So we're like, oh, okay, good. Pam Northam has a head on her shoulders. But Apparently, she does not, because something happened when there was a tour of, I believe, the governor's mansion, and someone, like a state employee, had an eighth grader, like one of their eighth grade child was on this tour of the governor's mansion, and they were like part of the state, like they are state pages, like for the state senate. And during this tour, they got to what is like the kitchen cottage, which is where the slaves used to work back when America was great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to say it. So she's talking about the history of this building. This is where the slaves worked. She got some cotton and asked three pages, and they were the only African-American pages in the program, mm-hmm. to hold this cotton and said, ask them to imagine what it must have been like to pick cotton all day.
She singled out the only African-American. Yes.
And said, here, this, because I know African-Americans need perspective
right.
on slavery. Why don't you hold this motherfucking cotton and mm-hmm. you tell me what it's like. Imagine what it would have been like. That was, I don't know what the fuck she was thinking.
What the
You're
fuck?
Even, yeah, everyone's lost.
I've been in like
well, maybe
such
she
a...
thought it would be whitewashing if she gave it to the white kids. And then
she
it...
would offend the black kids?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm just thinking, it's like, well, you know, Scar Joe got heat, you know?
Yeah.
right. So, you know.
Yeah.
I gotta stay accurate.
Recasting a black role as a white person if she gave it to the white students. So
mm-hmm. oh,
she's probably
no.
just extra like seventh dimensional woke. And that's probably what it was.
Yeah. And I mean, look, it's not a, oh, it's just not a good look. I mean, it's just a terrible idea. I mean, like if anything, yeah. you would give it to white children who would actually, you might need perspective
totally.
On systems of oppression.
Right.
Not
right.
people of color who are still operating under it to this day.
Right.
But again, she then came out and she was like, oh, I am really sorry. She said, I regret that I have upset anyone. And she's like,
that's
she
the
will
worst.
Work. I will work thoughtfully and honestly. And then she moonwalked off the stage. So
it's not an apology to say you're sorry you upset people.
Yeah,
that's
right.
It's
sorry you got offended. I'm sorry if I hurt somebody.
Right. I'm sorry if
no,
that hurt your
I'm
feelings.
I'm sorry that I did that. I'm sorry I made such a terrible decision
right.
in thinking that this was somehow going to be a teaching moment.
That's not mm-hmm. an apology.
But again.
All right. There was a gun control bill passed.
Hey.
And they managed to slide some bullshit into it as they are wont to do.
Yeah. I mean, this is the House passed the first significant gun control bill for the first time in over 20 years. And so now it closes that gun show loophole and now requires universal background checks on all commercial gun sales. That's even online at gun shows. But it does have a few exemptions, like it allows for gifts from family members or loaning a gun to someone while hunting or if it's for self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, I mean, since now the Democrats have control of the House, there's some momentum around gun control. They passed the bill. But at the last second, mm-hmm. Doug Collins from Georgia called for a motion to include a provision that would require the federal background check database to notify ICE if an undocumented immigrant tries to buy a gun. Now, this goes back to what your myth is. That's only there because these people are operating on the myth that undocumented immigrants are violent
right.
and are only, and are always trying to buy guns when that couldn't even be further from the truth.
Right?
Also, like, undocumented immigrants can't buy guns. You have to be an American citizen to buy one.
Right, sure.
Isn't that a problem?
Well, if you're at like a gun show or something,
oh, sure.
you can just be like, yeah, man, here, hook up the gun or whatever.
Right.
But again, it's just it's sort of meaningless, but it was just a weird attempt. And there are 26 Democrats actually voted for this too.
Yeah.
But those are a lot of people from purple districts or like people who just flipped Republican seats. So I think they didn't want to rock the boat too hard for their constituents. Either way, it passed. I mean, at the end of the day, though, the Senate is not gonna they're like well, what do we need to check, why do we need to strengthen background checks at all? I think we have a great system, even though like mm-hmm. I think a fifth of gun sales kind of flow through that loophole. So but again, you know, I guess maybe thoughts and prayers will stop all the bad stuff, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Is
anybody passing legislation to make thoughts and prayers real?
Oh shit,
yeah.
That, saying, I feel like think that would it. Be like a troll bill someone would put forward. They're like, this is the thoughts and prayers bill
right.
To fortify our thoughts and prayers potential.
There you go. And finally, Vulture put out a list ranking the best picture winners, and it has been helping me mourn the win of Green Book because it really puts into perspective how many great movies are missing from the list of Best Picture winners. The first...
Wow, what's on there?
Well, so what's not on there, like Forrest Gump is on there because it beat Shawshank Redemption and Pulp Fiction. Oliver beat 2001 A Space Odyssey. How Green Was My Valley beat Citizen Kane. So like some of the best movies ever are not on there.
Right.
You know, they get some things right, but it's really...
Why do people love Shawshank Redemption so much?
Because it's a really watchable movie.
I guess.
An insanely...
I don't know. I saw it like twice, and then I always watch it like hungover because it's on like TNT like fucking 23 hours a day.
That's right.
But maybe I've been over Shawshanked.
Yes. But the first half of the list is just mostly pretty forgettable garbage.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's go through.
Tell me.
I will.
When I tried to click on the link, Vulture's like, oh, you've seen all your free articles.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. They hit me with that soft paywall.
What?
Oh, I'm going to pay journalists.
So at 89, so there's been 91 Best Picture winners. I'll just list off the ones that you've probably heard of. 89 is Crash.
The Dave Matthews Band song?
Crash.
86 is The Artist. 84 is Driving Miss Daisy.
Mm-hmm.
83 is A Beautiful Mind.
Okay.
Which I totally agree with all this, and it's just good to have it put into perspective that, yeah, these were all terrible decisions. 81, Dances with Wolves. 80, Green Book. So these are all... we
keep going. 79.
We've been... well, no, I'm not going to go through all of them, but I'm just saying, like, these are movies that... Slumdog Millionaire from 2008. Like, what the... why did Slumdog Millionaire win?
Because it was broad and easy to digest.
At 76, we have a still overrated pedophile hero's tale, American Beauty. Yeah.
Academy's dead. I mean, they're making a museum. That means something like when you have a a retrospective or a museum, it means like an entity has died.
Right.
And you can see it in the halls.
Right.
You know? I mean, there was no host.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. I don't know.
I thought it was fine without
it. I thought it was fine and watchable.
But it's one of those things where, you don't, I don't know. Every year it's like the VMAs, man. I used to care.
Yeah.
I used to care about the MTV Video Music Awards. I used to fucking care who got a moon, man.
I remember there was such a stark drop off in my giving a shit about that. Like it was the summer before college. Chris Rock was hosting that year. I was excited. I was like, oh, fucking Chris Rock. Like that'll be the best. And then college started, and I remember like it was on TV as I was walking by someone's dorm room, and I was like, oh, I don't care about that at all.
We're in college
anymore.
Now, bro. Mm.
We're in college, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to balance my checkbook.
Exactly. I was busy balancing my checkbook.
On a pencil.
64, Forrest Gump, which every time I think about that movie, it gets like more absurd and racist. Forrest Gump is...
Hey, well, look, you could say that. I'm never going to stop eating at Bubba Gump Shrimp.
You can keep eating at Bubba Gump Shrimp.
No, I eat there, I think, 3 times a month.
The depiction of the Black Panthers in Forrest Gump is incredible.
Because that's right. I forgot about
the
that.
The Black Panthers are, first of all, just like so angry all the time. And then at one point, Forrest Gump like runs away from one of the Black Panthers because he's going to punch somebody who just hit Jenny, which the Black Panthers don't give a shit about. They're just like, oh yeah, whatever. People can hit women. That's no big deal. And after Forrest Gump runs away, the guy's still just yelling at the empty space where Forrest Gump had been before, which suggests that the Black Panthers were just like these automaton anger robots who like didn't even like it just shows such a lack of
just
perspective or context, empathy for anyone who isn't white. And it like rewrites history. So Forrest Gump is Wesley Morris from New York Times was talking about this week on his podcast, but it rewrites history. So like so a white male helps the young black woman who like is breaking through breaking the color barrier in Alabama.
Oh, that's right. He's like, you dropped your book.
He helps her pick up his book. It's just so weird because Robert Zemeckis is the same dude who rewrote history so that Marty McFly invented rock music instead of Chuck Berry.
Yeah, Chuck Berry.
That's
I almost said Barry Gordy.
Dang.
Yeah. He like his whole oeuvre is giving white men credit for things that they didn't take credit for already.
Okay, calm down now.
But the restaurant is a little bit of a different entity.
Well, yeah, don't touch the bubble gum shrimp.
We know that bubble gum shrimp is a little different.
That's based out of the love that Bubba and Forrest have for each
Bubba.
Other.
It's just Bubba, yeah. Bubba and his shrimp.
This person put Shakespeare in Love at 55, which seems way too high for
should
me.
Have been Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
I guess what I'm trying to ask is Forrest Gump canceled?
Oh,
would you cancel Forrest Gump?
Oh, a long time ago.
Oh,
I canceled Forrest Gump.
I can't cancel him.
All right.
Yeah,
I think of him as a real
Tom
guy.
Tom Hanks. You know,
who's Tom Hanks?
Okay, my bad.
You mean Forrest
it's
Gump?
About Bubba.
It's about Bubba Gump shrimp.
For anybody who wants to know the top, Casablanca is number one, Godfather 2, and Godfather Part 2 is number 4. All About Eve is 3.
Wait, seen. Godfather 1 is before Godfather 2?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's
not objective.
Yeah, sure, sure, mm-hmm. sure. Who is it written by? Like one person?
It is written by the...
Tim Grierson and Will Leach.
Yeah, there you go.
Sounds like a diverse group.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sounds like they love Casablanca.
Yeah.
Yeah, Casablanca's good. Come on.
No, it is, yeah. That's, yeah.
No, that one's right.
You're right. Right. I just started sweating from profusely sweating from my back.
For me, number one would be Mallrats.
Yes.
I don't know why that didn't make the fucking list.
Yeah.
But, you know, injustices happen every day.
Asko, it's been a pleasure having you back as always.
Hey, y'all have been amazing as always. Thank you for having me.
Asko, where can people follow you on social media?
So on social media, I'm on Twitter, Instagram. You can find me at Otsko Comedy.
Okay.
Comedy spelled Otsko, Atsuko Comedy. That's what I am on all over the socials.
All right.
Yeah.
You are an amazing follow. People need to follow you. And is there a tweet you've been enjoying?
Yes. Yeah. Kat Yuri. She's awesome. Follow her too. If your tattoos aren't stupid, you're a fucking nerd.
I loved that tweet. That is on my list as well. Miles.
Mine's stupid.
Miles.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. A couple of tweets I like. One is just a visual. It's by at Network Ned. Gout Will Hunting is the display name. And it's just a screen cap from Fox News from Michael Cohen's hearing. And the lower third reads, yes. Cohen, Trump's bad far outweighs his good.
What's
now,
wrong with that?
They spell it not fucking O-U-T-W-E-I-G-H. They spell it two words, O-U-T space W-A-Y-S. Outweighs his good. Shout out to all the people who do the graphics at Fox News. What the fuck is going on over there? But you know what? Keep doing the Lord's work. Another tweet I like is from Emma Roller at Emma Roller to the tune of Everybody Dance Now.
You motherfucker.
Everybody's canceled.
Dance.
I mean, everybody's
that was
fucking
mine.
Canceled. Oh, well. Oh, did I take all of yours? And then Otsko took the other one? Oh, wow, Jack.
I mean, dig deep. I also have one from Dana Schwartz.
Okay, well, then, yes. Okay. I now, what did he say in Congress? I now
yield the floor.
Yield the floor to you.
Okay. Dana Schwartz tweeted at Dana Schwartz with like 3 Z's, whispering as the light pulls me away. I will always love you, The Punisher, and also Liam Neeson in The Gray, and also every man in every movie ever. And she has this video of her underneath covers, like it's like that shot from the movie.
Of a memory of a dead wife.
A memory of a dead wife. She said, I did it in the wrong order, but that was her reply to a tweet of her own of that video that said, here's my audition to be your dead wife.
A lot of people I think were getting it hopping on that train on Twitter. I felt like different versions of like the dead wife memories characters have in films. Yeah.
Well,
Brittany Nichols was doing it too. It was like just the dumbest shit, like sipping a wine glass and like kind of spilling like, oh, like these like dumb, cute, over, like just tired ass moments from film.
That's the line, I will always love you, The Punisher, is. you can follow me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about
in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what's that going to be?
Yeah, in honor of Trump and Kim Jong-un's just on-again, off-again relationship, this is a track that's very fitting. It's called Off and On by the group Sales, S-A-L-E-S. So peep this. It's a, you know, good. Get your shoulders moving, you know? That's what we'd like to do. And the week strong.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. We will talk to you guys then. Bye.
Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes, Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.